Welcome to Recovery Uncovered. I'm your host, Cass. In today's episode, we're going to talk to Jane. I've known Jane for a little while now, and she's going to tell us a bit about how mental illness has affected her life. And just a bit of a trigger warning, we will be talking about suicide. So if you find that this topic is too hard to hear right now, please don't listen to this episode, and we'll catch you on the next one. And otherwise, if you need any help, you know, reach out to Here 24/7 and talk to somebody if you find it a little difficult to ingest. So hey, Jane.
Hi, Cass. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, anytime. How are you doing?
I'm having a pretty good day. It's Friday, so, you know, TGIF.
Everybody loves Fridays. I work tomorrow, so it's not really Friday for me. So tell me a little bit about yourself, Jane.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Bruce County called Chesley. Shout out to Chesley. And I have moved around quite a bit with school, doing an undergraduate degree out in Alberta and a graduate degree down in Vermont. Lived in Toronto for a while and got over that.
Right. What did you study in school?
I did my undergraduate degree in recreation administration, and I did my graduate degree, a master's of education in higher education and student affairs administration.
That's awesome. I also have my recreation and leisure diploma.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was a recreation therapist for quite some time.
Nice.
How is your mental health these days? Like, when I say these days, I mean, like, have you lived with challenges yourself when it comes to mental illness?
Absolutely. I would say I've been pretty healthy for the last number of years. I had a real bout of depression where I had to take time off work around 2000, which came after a lot of loss in my life that I don't think I really dealt with, and things just pile up and your brain and your body breaks down. I lost my mom to cancer when I was 19, and my dad to suicide when I was 29, and then my brother, who was the closest in age to me and who I remembered most growing up with, died when I was 35. And so I finally went to start getting some therapy, and I went to fairly intense therapy for about a year, and I had a suicide attempt during that time, and it was really kind of weird because I was at a pretty low point. It was right around 9/11, and I met my partner like in November, and you know, things really turned around for me, but I had some really dark time for almost a year. And the good thing is I dealt with the losses in my life and, you know, became a lot stronger because of it and learned some really good coping mechanisms, and also with the help of some well-prescribed medication.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear about all the loss you've had in your life when it comes to mental illness, and I'm glad that you're able to get some help in kind of working through your grief. You said that you are doing you're doing well now. What does that look like to you? You look healthy, I think you said.
Yeah, I feel my mental health really depends a lot on my physical health. I find if I get regular sleep and enough sleep, I'm in good shape. I do exercise every day, and I think that really helps my mental health. I surround myself with healthy people and stay in healthy relationships. And if I'm in a relationship that's not working, I get out of it. And that has, I think, too, led to working in very healthy environments. And now that I am a colleague of yours at CMHA, I feel like I'm in the healthiest environment I've ever been in, because everyone is very open, and if you're having a bad day, you just say you're having a bad day, and I just feel it's such a positive environment. I wish I had have found CMHA before February of this year.
Yeah, it's I didn't mention this before, but for those of you that know from this podcast, I work for self-help and peer support, which is through CMHA. And Jane, what were you hired on to do?
I was hired on as the peer navigator with a brand new program that's actually launching next week on September 10th, which is World Suicide Prevention Day. And the program is Support After Suicide is what it's called, and it is serving the rural residents of Wellington County, anyone who's been impacted by suicide. There's a mental health clinician and I and an OPP officer. The three of us make up the team, and we reach out and try to support those that have been impacted by a suicide.
You know, that's amazing, because I know a lot of people, when there's a suicide, you know, around them or in the family, often gets, it almost feels like a sense of blame, right? And they blame the victim for doing this, or for ruining their lives, for doing these kind of things. And the reality is they need help to understand, you know, what has happened. And I think that's what you're there to give, right? And
absolutely, because I went through a lot with my father and with my brother. And then, Cass, you also know that in January of this year, I lost one of my sisters to suicide as well. And I felt much better prepared to deal with that loss after experiencing the other two losses. And I think that what I bring to this position is a sense of understanding where someone else who has lost a loved one to suicide, where they're at and where they are right now, and that everybody's journey of grief is different. And you don't just go through the different stages in order for a certain amount of time. You jump around, and some stages last longer with some people and are shorter with other people. And I think what I can offer up to these individuals who have had these very tragic losses is a sense of hope.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
That it doesn't have to brand you for the rest of your life, and that you have nothing to be ashamed of, and that you have nothing to feel guilty about. And you talk about people blaming the person who died. Survivors often blame themselves too. They mm-hmm. think they should have known, or they should have done something, or if they had said something else, maybe that wouldn't have happened. And there's a lot of guilt, and suicide is really the biggest form of rejection, because you have a feeling that that person would rather be dead than be with you. And
yes,
that is a really dark place to be. And if I can help people at least know that I know how I felt when I lost my loved ones, and relate to them a little bit and give them a safe place to just be really honest, then I hope I can make a difference in some people's lives.
Well, I think you already have. I want to go back to your childhood, or during the time where you noticed symptoms or signs of possible mental illness in your family. I know your dad was the first one to pass away, to die by suicide. Did you notice anything with him prior to that?
Well, I mean, in a small town of 1,800 people, mental health isn't talked about that much. At least it wasn't when I was 19. But I know, since I have gone through therapy myself and have studied issues of mental health and had parts of mental health, you know, throughout jobs with staff that had mental health, or when I worked in university administration, students that had mental health issues. So I've learned a little bit. And I certainly remember my father being, you know, really high or really low. And he also developed a drinking problem, and I think died an alcoholic. And I think alcoholism can really trigger depression and anxiety. And I think he also died of a broken heart after losing my mom. He took his own life almost 10 years to the day after my mom died of cancer. And my brother, after my father died, told all of us, I have two other brothers and another sister. So there were six of us originally, six children, three boys and three girls. And my brother told all of us that he has dealt with depression all his life, that he had attempted suicide as a teenager, but none of us were told that. And so it taught me that you can't hide that. And my brother had so much shame about it, because, you know, mom and dad, for whatever they knew, certainly didn't share it with anybody else in the family. And it has certainly influenced the relationship I have with my son, because he's 15 and his brain's developing, and a lot of depression and anxiety can come out in teenagers. And I just try to keep that conversation really open, because it wasn't open in my family growing up. And I want him to know that if he has dark thoughts, there are alternatives to taking your own life.
Right. And I think, you know, you provide that open space in your family to talk about it. And that it is so hard knowing that you've had to live and grow through this. A lot of people know, I think I've mentioned in some podcasts, that I have attempted to end my life by suicide a couple times. And, you know, it was serious. I did want to die. And I didn't think things could get better. And I didn't feel like I had the resources, you know, that shame that your brother felt. And tell me a bit about what was happening in your life when you decided to attempt.
Well, it was when I was so depressed that I had to take a leave of absence from my job. And it was the year after my brother died. And I just had a real sense of abandonment and just felt that my, you know, immediate family was all dead, because my other siblings are all substantially older than me. So my brother and my father and my mother were really my immediate family growing up. My other siblings were all off and married and their own kids and whatever. Now, sorry, Cass. What was the question again? I'm so sorry.
Right. No worries. I just asked, you know, was there something going on in your life when you said it was
right.
your brother, right? So that
yes.
perhaps triggered
yes.
you, your yes. mental illness.
So I think it was all of that loss piling up, because my family, we were all taught to be stoic. I remember my dad gathering all of us when our mother died and telling us that we couldn't cry at the funeral home because that would make people feel bad.
Oh.
We were taught to be really strong. And so I didn't feel a lot of permission to be sad. And like I said before, you know, your brain and your body can only carry that weight for so long, and then it breaks down, and that's what happened to me. And I was at a point where I think I wasn't on the right medication, and my return to work date was coming up, and I was feeling very stressed about that. And the exact day that I tried to take my own life, I just think I felt like I didn't have any options. I felt like I was trapped. I felt like I was, you know, embarrassed. What was I going to say when I went back to work, why I was off work? And I, you know, didn't feel like I was ready to go back to work, but the insurance company felt like I was ready to go back to work. And I had to support myself because I was by myself.
Right.
And so I did that. And I think that sent a message to my siblings that, you know, there's a problem in our family, and there's a history of mental health issues. And I think, you know, I now know, doing the work that I do, that when someone in your immediate family takes their own life, there's a higher risk of you taking your own life, or someone else in the family trying to take their own life. But I didn't know that before. And I think part of it might have been for me that I wanted to feel how my brother and how my dad felt. And, you know, and I think that's just because I was in such a bad space that seemed like something I wanted to experience. And so I don't know, maybe at the time I really was just, it was more, I don't know. I think at the time I really thought I was wanting to end my life, but I I think I also, I just knew I needed a lot more help than I had. And so my siblings certainly surrounded me, and I went to live with one of my sisters, and then, like I said, I met my partner, mm-hmm. and I was just in a lot better place. And I think that whole, sometimes you have to hit rock bottom before you come back up. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of it for me too. And it also taught me how hard I need to work as an individual to have good mental health. That it's about what I eat, and it's about the exercise I get and moving my body. It's about my physical environment. It's about the people around me. It's about the relationships I'm in. It's about the workplace that I'm in. And that was the other thing before I attempted suicide. I had been in a couple of pretty bad work environments. Like, I will tell one short story. Right after my brother took his own life, I was working for a woman who was well aware that my father had just killed himself 6 years before, and that my mom had died 10 years before that. And my first day back after the funeral and the bereavement leave, my first day back, I went into her office to kind of say, hey, I'm back, catch me up on what's been going on, and let's get back to work. And she asked me how I was doing, and I think I gave her a fairly brief answer, and I'll never forget her response was, well, that's good, because you can't just stay home feeling sorry for yourself.
Wow.
And I started looking for another job that day, which I found. And so I think after I attempted to take my own life, it made me realize that I needed to work in environments with a supervisor or a manager or a team that had my back, because I knew that my mental health would ebb and flow.
Right.
And that when I was down, I needed to have people that were going to be behind me.
Well, you definitely have that with us, with CMHA.
That's for sure. Yeah.
We're definitely behind you 100%, and we think that you're amazing. And I'm talking on behalf of everybody, because I know everybody. No, yeah, it's, you know, I like the point that you brought up about it being not just about medication. You know, if you want to get better, you have to work towards it. You have to, you know, your physical health and you know, self-care and all of that kind of stuff. I think that's very important for people to know, right? I think a lot of people think it'll just get better or it won't. But you got to work at it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, Cass. I think for me that the medication is vital, but I think it's about 30% of my solution.
Okay.
Because I know what it's like if I'm not sleeping regularly, if I'm not, you know, if I'm injured and I can't run, or if I'm not able to get to a workout class, or if I'm in a, like, I hope this isn't going too widespread. Maybe I won't even name the group, but I was in a group that met on a regular basis, and I did a lot of thinking during COVID when we weren't meeting about how I just wasn't very connected with some of those people, and I was almost like I wouldn't look forward to going to that, which used to be like a night out of the house and socializing and fun. And so I resigned from the group. Mm. And I think, you know, when you are down and you know what it takes to get back up, you know how much you want to stay up, and you protect mm-hmm. your positive mental health really, really adamantly.
Yeah.
And so I was really proud of myself that I just left that group that wasn't bringing me a lot of joy. And so I'm very careful about who I spend time with. And I think you can relate, as all of our colleagues can. When you're dealing with people all week, your evenings and your weekends become sacred. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the people we talk to take a lot out of us. Or sometimes we have to talk about some really hard topics. And so when the evenings and the weekends come and you have to recharge your batteries, for me, I am so careful about who I spend time with.
Right.
And it's got to be really worth it. And yeah. I have become adamant about surrounding myself with people who accentuate my life, not who suck the life out of me.
Right. And to say that you know yourself very well, it's kind of because you've had so many experiences with mental health challenges, right? So you've gotten to know when you're about to have, say, a depressive episode or when things are starting to go down and what you can do to make it better, like going for a run.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it takes years for people just to know that. I know for me, I struggle a lot, and I have a really hard time finding the motivation to push myself. I've wanted to lose some weight, and I think it would greatly help my mental health, but as soon as I get outside, it's like I hit this brick wall. Have you ever felt like that before?
Well, I have been running for a long time, and I used to run marathons until I became injured about 3 years ago. So running is so embedded in my life. I wouldn't say, like, at mile 21 I hit a wall when I used to run marathons, for sure. And there are mornings that sometimes, especially in the dead of winter when it's dark out, you want to just stay in bed. Mm-hmm. But for me, how I feel at the end of the run, that gets me out the door.
Right. It's such a huge difference. It feels like my body is shaking when I come back, because I've used so much energy trying to go. But yeah, no, that's really good. Okay, so you said you have a family, you have a husband and a son. Do you guys talk about mental illness a lot, or are you open with each other?
Yeah, I talk about it a lot with my son. My husband grew up, I think, in a family similar to mine where, mental health didn't get talked about. But my husband, until very recently, hadn't experienced mental health challenges himself. So when our son was 12, I wanted to tell him about my dad and my brother's suicides. And I wanted to tell him about my suicide attempt. And my partner thought our son was too young, and that he didn't need to know that, and that that might make him want to try to kill himself, which, I knew was just bullshit. And I just said I'm sorry, I've listened to your side of this argument, and I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree, and you might be pissed off at me, but I'm telling him. Mm-hmm. And I did. And as some parents know, when you go on a drive with your child is sometime when you have the best talks, and that's what I did. We went for a drive, and I told him, and I just said, I will answer any questions you have, and you don't have to worry about mommy attempting suicide again, because I have too much to live for, and I am happy and satisfied with my life, and you and dad and I have everything we need in the world, and we have our extended families, and I just have too much to live for, and I would never do that intentionally to you and leave you devastated as I had been devastated. And then when my sister, one of my sisters took her own life in January of this year, that very night that I came home after the police investigation of the scene and everything, I came home late, and I asked my partner to keep our son up, because it was pretty late by the time I got home, because I said that he needs to know right away. I need to tell him right away. And so I did. Again, my husband did not want me to tell him. But I know my son appreciates it, and I know he was scared. He took my hand, and he was scared because he was worried about me.
Right.
And I had to emphasize to him again that I'm not going to let myself feel that sad again. I'm not going to let myself feel that much despair. I'm not going to let myself get that hopeless again, that I'm going to want to take my own life, and he doesn't need to worry about that. And if she had been in a car accident, or if she had broken her leg or whatever, we would tell him. So this is, this is a mental health crisis that happened, and it's just as important and just as real as a physical health crisis. And so once again, I had to go against my partner's wishes and tell Owen that. Mm-hmm. I had to tell our son that, because there were so many secrets when I was growing up, and I know how detrimental that was to me. And I will not raise my child with those same secrets, because secrets just don't, there's no good that comes from secrets. And I think the secret of mental health is so prevalent and so destructive for people that have mental health issues, when they feel they can't talk about them, when they feel they can't be honest, when they feel like they are weak mm-hmm. instead of sick, and they feel like if I ask for help, I'm showing that I'm weak. And so as much as possible, I want my son to know that he can always talk to me, and he can tell his friends that they can talk to me. And I have been down and out and in bad places, but you can get back up again and live and have a very happy life. And that is certainly what I try to teach him. And it's certainly the friendships that I have. I think that's another thing. Like, I don't have any like surfacey friendships. I only have friendships with people that I can just be really raw with mm-hmm. and really open and just dump whatever's coming out of my head, which could be all a jumble and half-baked and unorganized, but at least I feel safe with those people. And again, it's kind of like when I talked about what I'm looking for in a workplace, to be with people that have my back. And that's the same with our friends. I spoke briefly about my husband having mental health issues recently, just in about the last year. And it's really, I think, helped him see how important it is to be able to talk about mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And I think especially as a man, it's difficult for him to recognize that he's sick and not weak.
Right, exactly. And you know, part of me wants to like shout from the rooftop that you are incredibly brave to be so open about it. But the reality is, you know, it's 2020, and I really wish that more people were as brave as you and were able to talk about it and allow other people to come to you and talk about it, and you know, just to show people, like exactly what you said, you know, you are not weak. Just because you have mental health challenges, it does not make you weak. And I'm glad that you are so open with people, and I really hope that one day society will be the same. But right now it's a battle we're all fighting. Yeah. So did your son have any questions when you brought any of this up?
I found he came to me later, which I think maybe that's a boy thing, that you need to kind of, you know, like with guys, they got to go in the cave and think about things mm-hmm. and then they come back, whereas women want to talk about things right now and just get it all worked out. So I found he came back to me at other times. Like, he has actually started running with me in the last, well, since COVID, so the last 5 months maybe he's been running with me. And so we have really great talks while we're running. And I've also talked to him about where his dad's at, because I want him to understand that what's going on, you know, when his dad's down or his dad's grumpy or his dad is silent or his dad's sleeping more than normal, that it has nothing to do with our son. And there's nothing that he did wrong to cause that, because I think, you know, I think I felt sometimes that maybe I caused some of the mental health issues with my siblings, and that maybe I could have done something differently and they would still be alive. You know, and I think in your grief, you slip back every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And so again, just keeping those conversations going. And I think my honesty about my mental health has allowed my partner to be so much more honest about it. You know, at least he's talking to me. I don't know how much he's talking to his friends or his colleagues about it, but at least he's talking to me.
That's the first step, right? Talking to one person and then going from there.
And knowing that it's okay, and mm-hmm. that it's, you know, you're managing your mental health the same as you would manage your diabetes. You know, you wouldn't just say, well, I'm not going to take insulin, I'm going to just tough this out, I'm going to just push through this, you know?
Right.
Like, nobody with diabetes would do that. They would take the insulin so that they could have a quality of life and live. And that is the same thing with mental health. You need to get the help. You might need to make some changes in your lifestyle. You might need to be on some medication for a while. You might need to be on some medication for the rest of your life. But there are steps you can take to feel better and have an exceptional quality of life.
You are well said. Well said. Do you have any, not per se advice, but what would you tell somebody that's going through similar grief that you went through? What are some coping strategies that they could use?
Well, I think you've got to stay connected. You've got to have at least one person to talk to, and it doesn't need to be a professional, because lots of times, especially in the early stages of dealing with especially a death by suicide, you just need somebody to listen. Because you just need to be able to say what you're thinking. And it has to be someone you can trust, so you can be really honest, not, oh, I better not say this because what are they going to think? You need to be somebody that you can just dump whatever is in your head or whatever is in your heart at that moment. And you need somebody that's going to listen, not say, oh, it'll get better, oh, it just takes time, or, oh, I had this other experience in my life that was worse. You know, like, those are not the people you need around you. And just that honesty in conversation and that safety in knowing that how you're feeling right now is exactly how you should feel. You don't need to feel like somebody else. You don't have to be in another stage of grief. You just need to be where you are right now. And I think getting out in nature and moving, whether it's a bike ride, whether it's a stroll, whether it's a hike, whatever it is, I think getting out in nature is so important. I think if you can interact with children and animals, or one or the other, or both, I think that just, you know, like, no one is more excited when I get home than my dog and my cat. Like, my son and my husband are never nearly as excited to see me as a dog and a cat. You know, and having that unconditional love is so important at that time in your life when you're feeling so low. And just have, you know, a cat come up and crawl up on your lap and start purring, or have a dog like so excited that you're going to take them for a walk, and just bring a lift to your day. And I think talking to a physician to see if medication might be needed, again, like I said, on a short-term basis or perhaps a longer-term basis, to see if you just need a little bit of a push to get out of that low that you're in. And I think being in a positive work environment, in a positive work environment, I think is really important, because we spend most of our days and week there. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to be a supportive environment. And you need to be in supportive relationships with your friends and family. And if they can't be supportive of you at that time, then maybe you need to take a step away from them for a little while. Or maybe they need to do some work on themselves before they can be what you need them to be.
Right.
And I think you have to be honest about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I lost the question. I just had it. So earlier you mentioned that you are a peer navigator. So can you give us an example a bit about what is peer, and why is it important to have that peer role in mental health, in the mental health field?
Well, the mental health clinician I work with, who is fantastic, by the way, you know, but she says, you know, Jane, when you meet with people, or when we meet with people, you connect with them automatically. I have to work at it and build their trust, but they know, because I, Jane, have gone through something similar to what they've gone through, there's that automatic connection. There's that automatic trust. There's that automatic, I don't have to tell Jane what I'm feeling because she's been through it. Like, she gets it. She knows. And it's a real safe place for them to talk to. They don't have to be ashamed of it, because I have had the same, you know, bad thing happen, or negative thing happen, or embarrassing thing happen, or, you know, whatever negative stigma you want to attach to suicide. They know that I'm not any better than them. I'm kind of exactly the same as them. And I'm just a safe place for them to dump whatever wants to come out of their head or their heart.
Yeah, I agree. You know, growing up, I felt like I didn't relate to the psychiatrists or the doctors that talked to me. It wasn't until I found self-help and peer support and I started to talk to other people that, you know, lived with the same experiences as I did and do, that things started to feel like they were changing. And, you know, I'm grateful every day for that peer aspect to mental health because, you know, you're right. You have to trust somebody to be able to talk to them. And how much easier is it to trust somebody when you can understand or you know, empathize with them for similar situations? I wanted to talk about World Suicide Prevention Day. Is there anything planned through your work or for yourself that you're going to do?
It's the day we're launching the program. So that's a kind of a big deal. So we are announcing to our different partners in the county who we think we will get referrals from. We are announcing to the media we're kind of open for business, for lack of a better word, and helping people understand what services we provide and who are the members of our team and, you know, what we can do. Not only, you know, my mental health clinician can do counseling, I can support, you know, the OPP officer can answer a lot of the technical questions around the suicide and the police investigation of that situation. Also all the education that we can do in the county, because postvention, which is what support after suicide is, postvention is the term for it. Postvention is really prevention. Mm-hmm. And so that is really exciting. If we can save some people from having to go through that situation again by losing someone else to suicide, we would like the opportunity to try to prevent that from happening. And I can tell you that my team were going out for lunch that day, so that's kind of special because, of course, in COVID, who's going out for lunch these days?
I am.
good. And so really, that's as much of a launch as we are doing, and then we're just going to be ready for the people that want to connect with us and hopefully get some help from us and get some hope from us.
Yeah, I'm very excited that Support After Suicide has you know, started. I'm really excited that you know, I think it's going to help a lot. I think that having you guys out there is going to increase the conversation and you know, further the scope of reach we can do. In terms of that, like, do you think that suicide is talked about enough? And if it's not, why do you think it's important to talk about it?
I don't think it's talked about enough. I think there's still a huge stigma about it. I think there's just as much stigma about it when my sister died this year and when my brother died in 1999. Like, I don't think things have changed that much, especially in rural communities. Mm. And sorry, was the question, how do I think that's going to change?
No, why do you think it's important to talk about it?
Well, I think it's important to talk about it so that if people are feeling down, if people are depressed, if people feel hopeless, if people feel overwhelmed with despair, that they know there's an alternative to just ending their life. They know, so that they know they can talk to somebody and say, this is where I'm at. I need help.
And that's, you know, Jane, I think that's a perfect way to end it. If you are suffering out there, just remember that you can talk to people. Say that you need help. So, you know, if you are suffering out there and you feel like you don't have anyone to talk to, please know that there are several resources out there. And just reach out. We understand how hard it can be. I struggled to reach out to, and, you know, we have Here 24/7 if you ever need to call somebody. I will add the phone number to the bottom of this podcast. If I just want to thank Jane for coming and joining us today. I know I've said it a bit before, but you really have to, you know, take some credit in how amazing you are doing and how amazing the work you do is. And I don't know that I could handle what you have had to go through. And, you know, you're incredibly positive, and I'm so glad that I've been able to meet you this year, because, you know, you're going to make a difference. You're put on this earth to make a difference. I truly believe that. So thank you for coming on the show, and we look forward to hearing you again.
Thank you for having me on the show, Cass, and thanks for whoever ends up listening to this. And just to reiterate what Cass said, if you're feeling, you know, hopeless and feeling there's more despair than hope in your life, just talk to somebody. Reach out and get help, because there's help available out there.